I'd like to begin this morning by telling you a story that my friend Delmer, who is in fact a preacher in the South, told me, and he swears this is true, so I cannot vouch for it, but he can. It's about the founding of a very special church, which they say you can still find in Mayfield County, Kentucky. This is the story of the Mayfield County Anti-Peg Baptist Church. The Anti-Peg Baptist Church. Not the First Baptist or the Second Baptist or the Free Will or the Grace Calvary Baptist, but the Anti-Peg Baptist. You see, the story goes, back in the late 19th century, there were two deacons who served this small church in Mayfield County. And one Sunday, one of the deacons just so happened to put up a wooden peg on the back wall of the sanctuary from which the minister could hang his hat. Well, the other deacon came into church that next Sunday, saw the peg, and was outraged that he was not consulted as to its ideal placement or propriety, and before long the congregation took up sides on the issue and split clearly in two, and they say even today, you can go to Mayfield County and find there both the Mayfield County Baptist Church and the Mayfield County Anti-Peg Baptist Church. We might chuckle, but it doesn't take much, after all, to drive a wedge between members of a beloved community from which it is hard to recover. Underneath our laughter is the knowledge that dear, dear people have taken great offense at lesser crimes than the hanging of a hat. And living into our ideals about how we are to be in relationship with each other has everything to do with how we choose to behave when we are righteously aggrieved. And if we choose to stay in relationship with each other, even in the presence of our offenses. There's a story from our own tradition that's told by Peter Tuff Richardson in his book, The Boston Religion. And this story goes back to the old days of Unitarian churches, a long time ago when members didn't pledge financially for the support of their church. Instead, you would buy your family pew. It was like a piece of real estate. And you could will it to your children and your children's children, and it passed down generation after generation. And in one of these congregations, actually one of our oldest, in 1720 at the New North Church in Boston, a new minister was called, and a bunch of people in the congregation weren't so sure about him. And in fact, one of the longtime members of the congregation disliked the new minister so greatly that he nailed shut the entrance to his pew. Just to make it clear that he would not be occupying it anytime soon, and neither would anyone else. I like to imagine that pew was front and center, so that preacher had to look at it every Sunday morning. Now, after 6 years of frustration, the story goes, a group of men from the church went down into the church basement and sawed right up through the floor around the pew. And the aggrieved member was greeted the next morning by his pew blocking the sidewalk just outside his apothecary shop. Churches are silly places, that's the truth. And in some ways they are smaller representations of the wider world outside their doors. A world where people are trying desperately to find a way through all of their differences and towards some actual productive and authentic work together. Trying desperately, they are, and much of the time not succeeding. Just look at our current political climate. Our leaders on every level, from the Prince William County Board of Supervisors to the Congress of these United States, are so busily entrenched in their own ways of thinking and their eagerness to be pure in their ideological disagreement that nothing ever gets done. Seems these days that everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to carry the day or move the country in their doctrinal construction of the right direction, but nobody is willing to actually talk to one another long enough to hang in there with one another long enough to make any progress whatsoever. the pew door gets nailed shut. The congregation or the Tea Party or MoveOn.org takes their pro or anti-hat peg fervor and marches across the street and founds a new group, another splinter, yet another organization whose constituency is too small and whose allegiance is too narrowly defined to make a darn bit of difference at all. And here we are, a church whose very founding principle is unity amid diversity. A congregation whose ideals claim that we here will not walk away from each other the first time an ideological or theological or political line gets drawn. Here we are, people who have disagreement written into our hundreds of years of institutional history, and we are somehow supposed to model what seems so impossible in the wider world: productive, powerful, and decent disagreement. This is important work, never more so than right now, and it is uniquely ours to do. They used to say that at my alma mater, Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago, that the people who didn't believe in God would sit at one lunchroom table, and the people who did would sit at another, and they would scowl at one another. I don't know if this is true, but I tell you I would not know which table to sit at, because it would depend wholly on which version of God you're talking about. I've simply never believed that line between theist and atheist, believer and non, was that real a line at all. And our movement is moving more and more toward creative non-agreement on the issues of theology. The borders between theological identities have become for us as a group less precise. And like so many of us, I am often hard-pressed to choose one side of an imagined boundary regarding matters of faith. For others among us, our personal ideologies could not be any clearer or any more decisive. The lines to some of us are absolutely real, and we know where we stand. But the willingness to stay in relationship with those on the other side of that line makes all the difference in the world, and that is when we live out our ideals. Ours is a faith where tolerance is trumpeted and difference is strength. And yet we are not persons who tend to hold our beliefs lightly and without conviction. In fact, many of us are folks who take some significant amount of pride in the fact that we are not followers, and we do not bow to the pressures of the majority on much or anything, especially on issues that are important. As such, we are a people of diverse understandings and strong opinions on just about everything. And when we come together to do this work that we do, those two forces, diverse understandings and strong opinions, come face to face in interesting and powerful ways. And that, I think, that genuine disagreement, that creative disagreement, is one of our greatest strengths as a people of faith. It's something other churches don't usually have, and it's a gift that we are called to live into more richly than we currently do. We should ideally come together not to be with people who agree with us, but expressly to be in powerful and honest relationship with those who don't. We should find in this place an example of what the world could be, where people don't talk around the issues but to them, where friends don't avoid the pain of honest disagreement but walk into it in faith that we will make it through together to the other side, wider in our faith, deeper in our convictions, and gentler in our actions than we ever could have been before. Here, we should be able to say what we are too afraid to say elsewhere, and it should make us more courageous so that we can begin to make the world outside these doors a more honest and productively disagreeable place as well. We are to be passionate and compassionate at the same time. And in so doing, we are called to be a rather fiery bunch, always shaken out of our complacency by the sheer wonder of those who offend us. In being offended, we are invited to refine our own beliefs by the true testimony of those who believe differently, and we have a chance to succeed at both changing ourselves and changing the other. In his book, Privilege, Power, and Difference, Alan Johnson reminds us that there are very high consequences to human beings' tendency to get stuck in behavioral and ideological ruts, the kind of practices that perpetuate themselves over lifetimes and generations. These behavioral ruts can be fine at times. The men sit at their Greek coffee house every morning going about their business uninterrupted. The family eats fish every single Friday. The athlete who carries out the same ritual before each and every race. But sometimes these behavioral and ideological ruts, if unchallenged, can be the exact opposite. They can be the grounding for horrible atrocity. Racism is a behavioral and ideological rut. And if nobody had the courage to be offended and say so, nobody would have the impetus to change. When we are in deep and transformative relationship with each other, with our families, with our church, we are called to be honest and self-revelatory, and that is dangerous territory. Because sometimes even the ruts we never wanted to admit were there rise up and catch us, and we fall without ever seeing it coming. We fall into ruts of self-righteousness, of bias, of intolerance of the worst kind, and isms both subtle and direct. We give offense not because we intend to, but because the old, old rut is still there, still tripping us up, and only the creative work of disagreeing, of being offended, and of staying in relationship can ever pave a smoother way forward. Offense, both offered and received, can be a profound agent of moral transformation. It's not a bad thing inherently to offend each other. One could argue it's one of the few things that ever creates change, and that running away from it does nothing but perpetuate the rut that drags us down toward another generation of bias, another statement of divisive nonsense, another day where honest people avoid the issues and let the issues go unstated, yet again, down the ages, toward nothing. Please take offense, and let your offense change me into something better than I am today. Please take offense at one another, and let that offense bring you closer, not drive you apart. Please disagree, and yet actually get somewhere by working together in the presence of that disagreement. Take that skill learned and inculcated here and take it out to your government jobs and your soccer fields and your classrooms and your board meetings and change the world by not being afraid anymore to speak the truth as you see it and stay alongside those who see it differently. I will tell you that offering offense and taking offense in the service of the greater good requires an awful lot of faith. This faith mostly relates not to God, but to each other. To speak the truth to you in love, I have to have faith that you're not going to turn your back on me. To openly and compassionately state the truth of your offense, you have to believe, first of all, that I'm going to listen to you. And that kind of faith in one another isn't easy to come by. But here, if we live out our ideals, it should be. If we relate to one another in the way we say we can, we should believe wholeheartedly that underneath our disagreement lies respect, tenderness, friendship, and ever-deepening love. That simple faith turns disagreement into transformation, and that faith makes it possible to speak our truths. I'm not sure how this next part might come across, and I tell you that I love all the members and the friends of this congregation. That is the truth, and it's not entirely describable. I love you all. But in my heart, I do sometimes play favorites. And it's not in the way you would imagine. I swear this is true, that the ones among you I love the most, the ones I will miss the most whenever our paths cease to run alongside one another, are the ones with whom I have disagreed, sometimes quite pointedly, and you know who you are, and I shall judiciously avoid eye contact. The ones with whom I have disagreed and who have still never let me go. The moments in ministry I am proudest of are those times when I am offended, not just a little, but really good and offended. Or the times when I have offered offense, and I am never for a moment tempted to let go of you either. That's how I know this place is the real deal, because faith in you all makes it safe to love you most when we disagree, because there are little fights that I will pick with some of you just for the sheer joy of it. And the smile on your face when I pick those fights lets me know you care too. My challenge to us today is to never nail the pew door shut, to never walk across the street and form the anti-PEG Unitarian Universalists of Manassas, Virginia, and most of all, to never shy away from an honest conversation for lack of faith in one another. Let us be offended, dear ones. Let us be passionate and compassionate people with a faith that really does set us free. And may we truly bless those whom society says we should curse, because they are the ones who have the power to move us toward transformation. Blessed are those who disappoint us. They remind us that our powers are not illimitable. Blessed are those who offend me. They help me to understand the deep wells of my own emotion. Blessed are those who find a way to work together. They are the only way forward. Blessed are those with whom I disagree. They make my life infinitely more interesting. Blessed are those whom I offend. They know more clearly the truth of their own convictions. Blessed are those who forgive me. They remind me that I am worthy of forgiveness. And blessed are the offensive ones, for they shall surely change the world.